Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Let's talk. John Brown.
Slow trains around Britain. Join travel writer and self-confessed train nut Tom Cheshire as he celebrates 200 years of passenger railways on a zigzagging tour around the UK where trains proudly began. The guests pulling into platform number 5 is none other than Tom Cheshire himself. Tom, good morning. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How is it in Spain?
It's you know, I mustn't. It's better than waiting. It's better than waiting, you know, on platform on somewhere in Clapham Junction. Clapham Junction, yeah. From that thing, that connection to New Cross that never comes. It's not too bad, thank you. Now, you self-confessed train nuts. Tell me a little bit about this then, please, Tom.
Well, I'll tell you. I've been working as a travel journalist for many, many years. Yeah. And at the beginning of the time when I was writing about travel, the low-cost airline revolution was happening. So Ryanair, EasyJet, they were all beginning. And I was fascinated at the time by how planes were revolutionizing the way we traveled. So you could just pop into Europe sometimes for 1 pence, or, you know, 1 pence each way plus tax. Oh. And I wrote a book at the time about going to places you couldn't spell in Poland and you couldn't pronounce in Czechoslovakia and at the end of it, as I was doing, I was thinking, this is actually not that great for the environment, this going on so many planes. And so at the end of the book, I interviewed Stelios, who ran EasyJet airline, and I asked him, you know, I took the arguments of Greenpeace to Friends of the Earth, sorry, to him.
That saying, must have been an interesting gambit to Stelios.
I was being devil's advocate. Oh, so I wasn't actually, you know, saying these are my arguments. I was saying the arguments are that planes push the emissions up into the sky high up and they're much more damaging than people realize. But also I had a kind of a feeling. And so after doing this book and going on all these places, to Slovenia, to Latvia, to Czech Republic, and all the rest of them, I realized, well, actually, maybe I should be going on trains. And so this is where I had a kind of a change of heart about the way of getting around. And at the time, Eurostar was also coming. Eurostar began in 1994. And I thought, oh, hold on a minute. You can go around Europe by all these high-speed trains. And so my next book was Tales from the Fast Trains, instead ignoring the low-cost airlines and kind of, you know, I don't know, it was an act of, you know, I'd made my mistake with the low-cost airlines and I was going to make up for it by showing how you could go on all these lovely trains around Europe and high-speed trains. And I loved doing those journeys. But ever since then, I've had and what I realized when I did it was that when you're on trains, you meet characters and people and you talk to people. You don't do that on planes. You sit down in a very small space, 15 inches wide with 30 inches of space, knee space, seat, yeah. And you sit there and you wait for this metal tube to land.
Yeah.
But it take off and get there. But with trains, people walk up and down. They meet. They're much. There's something about the motion of the track.
Yeah.
That gets people talking.
I think it's the thing, isn't it? The fact that because if you get up and wander around a plane, people go sit down for goodness sake. And you know, and a plane is a method from A to B. That is it. Whereas a train is absolutely. It is the journey. I mean, okay, you might get stuck in somewhere with due to leaves on the line, but it's still the thing. It journeys out the window. You can be convivial or whatever you want to. I mean, I even remember smoking carriages. For goodness sake.
I vaguely remember them as well. But so it's about the journey, it's about looking out the carriage windows and you get a completely different experience. You're right, you're packaged when you're flying, you're packaged in a metal tube. You go from A to B. You could be anywhere in the world at one airport it doesn't, you know, it's just a series of departure gates and duty free shops. But so with trains, so that's, I was trying to get to the heart of like why I made the move from planes, if you like, to trains. But for me, the trains are all about the scenery and the characters. So I'm not, when I say I'm a train nut, which I'm slightly joking about,
right?
See, it's about the love of going around in a slow way, because the title of the book is Slow Trains Around Britain, meeting people, taking your time, going off on little branch lines, because these lines, they take you, you ain't got any choice like you with a car. With a car, you can take a little detour. With a train, you go from one place to another. So it takes away the worry of where you're going, so you can enjoy the scenery. And on this, for this book, it was 4,088 miles, 143 rides.
Wow.
It took several months. And I got to know Britain in a completely different way. So instead of looking at Britain and just seeing the map of Britain, I saw the network, I saw the rail map of Europe, of Britain, right? So I began, you can only go, you know, if it wasn't on the rail map, it didn't exist. So yeah. It's like your whole view of the country changed.
Yeah, and also the thing is, one of the things is you, if you, I mean, I come from the Midlands, and it's oh, yeah. And there are, because of the, you know, the in the 60s, of course, there was this whole thing with cutting off all branch lines, and every village, basically, I mean, I used to live in a place called Baldwin's Gate. That'll give you an idea of, it was very rural, but there was a train station there which had been closed. It, you know, trains went through it, but it was no longer operational, and probably now it's been converted into, I don't know, some sort of pub or something. But you think, and it was that sort of faded Victorian glamour that you may think, oh, if only that little branch line was still going, that would make the hop into Newcastle under Lyme, not upon Tyne, would make it an awful lot easier than having to drive through the thing, through various places to get there. And perhaps that's, you know, you get glimpses of that as well as you're being trained around, Tom.
Well, and also you learn all about the notorious or devilish Dr. Beeching of the 1960s, yes, whose big report about cutting the branch lines, which you're talking about. And so, and he, there were probably too many of these small branch lines, and they were not productive. They weren't, not enough people were using them. They weren't making money. So there was a room for improvement. There was a room for some cutbacks, but he took it too far. And much to the detriment of some places, like when I went to Lincolnshire on this journey. Yeah. So I went to Skegness, where they had the Jolly Fisherman railway poster. And I talked to, yes, Britain's number one Jolly Fisherman railway poster expert.
That's the chap in the yellow, isn't it?
The fisherman, like on the beach with his arms out, hopping across a puddle kind of thing. And on the beach. But in Lincolnshire, there's very few train lines through the middle, and it's quite cut off. And this fellow I was interviewing in Skegness said, well, actually, it's so sad because you almost have to have a car if you want to go around. So when talking about Beeching and his cutbacks, yes, some were needed, some pruning was needed, but he took it way too far. And it's sad because we invented the trains at the Stockton and Darlington Railway 200 years ago. September 27th, 1825. So that's the date. That's the big date that George Stephenson, our hero, our engineering hero of the Victorian era, created the locomotion number one. So we invented these trains that revolutionized the way the whole world traveled. Yet by the 1960s, we were slightly kind of getting sour about them.
Yeah, indeed. When you think about, you talk about your high speed rinks, you think about the TGV in France, and of course we're lucky because we've got the AVE down here, you know, in Spain, those fast links, and you sort of get to sort of the UK and it all slows down an awful lot. So I would have thought you would have started it maybe at one of the Eurostar terminals, but you start in Darlington. Now here's a question I thought I'd never ask: what's Darlington like?
Well, I was very open-minded about everywhere I went. I liked Darlington. It had got little lanes down the middle, in the middle of town, with a nice market square in the middle. It has a couple of railway museums, so very useful to me. And one of them is actually just on the edge in Shildon, just on the edge of Darlington, and that's a fantastic called the Locomotion Museum, and that's where Locomotion Number One can be seen. But there's also a railway museum within Darlington itself that wasn't open when I was there. Actually, they were getting it ready for the 200th anniversary, I followed the line about 20 odd miles down to Stockton, which was originally this railway was for taking coal to the river and onto boats to go south. Stockton proved to be too small, so they needed to go further down the river and develop a place called Middlesbrough. Now, Middlesbrough was just a little few houses, a little, not even a hamlet, really.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's not a city, but it's a big major town. And sometimes a Premier League team. So I took the journey down there on the train, and then went through down into North Yorkshire. There's a beautiful railway there. So sometimes when I was doing this journey, it wasn't just on regular trains.
Yeah.
So
we're getting to Hogwarts Express territory, aren't we? Basically, Tom.
Sometimes. So I think I went on about 9 of these railways, these heritage railways around Britain. So I would sometimes think, okay, I can go through the county, go through this county in this direction, but I will make a kind of deliberate effort to go to this place. So the North Yorkshire Moors Railway is a wonderful steam railway that goes between Gromont and Pickering.
Right.
And it's
not, I've got a clue where any of both those places are, but I just went right because I thought, yeah, go.
Well, neither did I either. Right. Before I began, I mean, I was learning all the way. Yeah. So I'm not like a massive rail enthusiast knowing everything. But so, so you can, if you like, you can, as I did on this journey, you can take your train around Britain and on a holiday, say, if you don't have to do it as long as I did it, go for a couple of weeks and maybe stop off at a couple of these lines. There's one in North Wales, Blaenau Ffestiniog Railway. Yeah. And then you have down in Swanage, there's an old steam train, and there's the West Somerset Railway, the East Lancs. When you start investigating, in fact, there are 180 heritage railways.
Wow.
These little, and basically, so Britain is full of rail enthusiasts who keep these, and thousands of volunteers do it.
You only have to go there. I mean, I remember I was doing, because I used to be in another life, I was a property journalist, and I ended up doing I ended up in 1990, whatever it was, and I ended up getting being trained up from whatever to Newcastle. And I remember turning up in Newcastle, and it had that sort of weather. And at the end of that station, which is quite imposing, it's a big, you know, it's got turrets and the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was Newcastle weather. I mean, it really was. And there are a couple of guys in anorak taking, you know, and you do not get train spotters in Spain. I've yet to see one in Spain, Tom. So,
yeah, well, I went around Spain on trains, so I did a book, Slow Trains Around Spain. Yeah. So I didn't see any.
Did you see, you know, saying, oh, this is the Bobadilla to Granada?
No, you're right. There is a railway museum in Madrid, yes. That was really nice, near a Toche, whatever.
Excuse me. That's the one you're looking
for. Sorry. So there's a difference between the kind of rail enthusiast volunteer who supports these little, and the train spotter. Now, during this trip, to make it kind of bring it to life, I deliberately went out of my way to interview the train spotters of Britain.
Ooh.
And so I interviewed them along the way, many of these chaps, it's a very gentle, harmless pursuit.
Yes.
And they tended to be incredibly nice, softly spoken, good people who also had tea flasks and, you know, so forth with them, and their little notebooks marking off numbers sometimes, not always. And they were incredibly knowledgeable. So a train would go by and I'd be like, that's a train. And they would be like, oh, it's a diesel 45,
yes.
You know, built in Germany. But it's a pity because there used to be more of them, but now they've been superseded by la la. You know, they tell you. And it's going to Scarborough because it's carrying wagons of freight. They would know everything about. They have a kind of network of kind of, and so the, and I found these people it kind of, it was almost like a hobby. I was spotting the train spotter, you know, so I would go as traveling around Britain, and it brought to life. So what this book is about, it's a love letter to our creation of this marvelous way of getting around the world by trains, yeah. Revolutionized human movement. And so what I embrace as much of that as I can.
And here's the thing, because if you are reading The Guardian or the supplements, I mean, the buzzwords, because I do travel as well, and slow train travel is now the thing. Sleeper carriages people want to go from Barcelona to Stockholm by train nonstop because of the environmental impact.
Yeah, that can be a lovely. I did recently. There was a European sleeper. It's called Brussels to Venice. I took that train.
Oh, my heart bleeds for you there, Tom. My absolute two of my favorite cities in the world.
It wasn't posh though.
No, so it doesn't have to be.
Now that was quite affordable that journey, and it was a lovely thing to do because you go through the Brenner Pass from Innsbruck down to Verona, and so that was. So I do, as you gather, I do know a little bit about trains, but in terms of the routes, and I've gone on a lot of them around Europe. But but in Britain, we don't have that many sleepers. So we've got, you've got the Night Riviera, it's called, which goes from Paddington to Penzance.
Right.
And then you've got Caledonian Sleeper.
Yes.
That goes from between Euston and Aberdeen, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Fort William, and it has different places it goes to. And on the trip, I took one sleeper, which was Euston to Aberdeen. I absolutely loved it, and you get to Euston and it's dark and it's, you know, they've got a little lounge that you can use,
right.
And I got onto the train. It was purring by the platform, and then we slid out. You know, with the post office tower to one side, and moved out of North London, and then there's a dining carriage, and the food wasn't expensive. It wasn't, you know, a kind of Orient Express type experience, but it wasn't a canteen either.
Here's another thing that you just mentioned, something that I this is what I absolutely love on traveling by train, is when you pull into a city or a town and you get to see the outskirts, especially in London, when you see the backs of people's houses and stuff like that, which you don't get. And I know it's a very prurient thing, you know, but you don't get if you're flying in, it's a Stansted on the 9:15 from Dublin. You don't get to look unless he's flying really low.
But trains allow you to be nosy.
Yes.
so you can see all the different spots. They take you when you're flying over the world. You don't go through, Scunthorpe or whatever. You don't go through the different spots along the way that you do see on the trains. Yeah. But on the sleeper service, it's sleepers to Aberdeen. So by 5 a.m. in the morning, set my alarm to get up, having had the nice meal and gone on the train. And then we were going over the Tay Bridge towards Dundee, and there was mist on the river. And then we went up via the coast along the cliff top, with cliffs plunging to the sea towards Aberdeen. And it was one of the greatest things, because you've begun in London.
Yeah.
You've had a meal, you've fallen asleep, and you're up in Scotland. And you're about to go to a very interesting city, Aberdeen, with lots of interesting, good art galleries and plenty of lively restaurants and bars and all the rest of it. And then from there, and this I can highly recommend as a journey around Scotland, is to go, you can go to from Aberdeen to Inverness. And then from Inverness, you go north all the way to the most northerly station in Britain, which is Thurso. With the main line, so right up at the top, quite close to John O'Groats, and then come back down to Inverness or Dingwall, and then go across to the Kyle of Loch Alsh. So that's on the west of Scotland. And there, you're right by the Isle of Skye. So what you do there, you get off at the end of the station, and you get a taxi or a bus, and you go onto the Isle of Skye, and then you get a little ferry, and the ferry goes south to a place called Mallaig. Mallaig is where you get the train. This is where the Hogwarts Express, you can get the Jacobean steam train there. And that goes all the way down to Fort William And so, but I didn't get the fancy steam train because it wasn't running when I was there. But I got the regular train all the way down via Fort William from Mallaig to Glasgow. So you can go around Scotland by train.
Wow.
And these fares are not expensive.
Yeah.
So you're looking at maybe 20 quid here. Sometimes I think the one from Inverness to Kyle of Lochalsh was 12, 15 quid. So you can have this wonderful, so people don't realize you can have a train holiday in Britain, which I hope my book gets as well as capturing the our love affair with a steam train.
I used to go down to report on places like, I don't know, Cardiff Bay was being, this is how long ago it was, in the 90s, but also went down to Plymouth, and of course, and that's, you know, Paddington to Plymouth, if you're going down to sort of the ends into Cornwall or whatever, albeit I had to put a post-it note on my head saying Plymouth, just in case I fell asleep. because this was back in the day before phones, yeah? And if you fell asleep, because I used to go out a lot, if you fell asleep at 6 o'clock in the morning from Paddington, you would wake up in Penzance, which you didn't want to do. If you had a 9 o'clock with the director of Plymouth City Council, but again you get to see that wonderful. You get to see how Britain changes, and it's not a bland. It's not all, you know, with gracious deference, Milton Keynes. It's not all bland, and it's fascinating. As are the people, Tom.
Yes, exactly. I'm trying to think of another lovely train journey, of some of the lovely ones.
So
North Wales was beautiful, going up into the Blaen Alfestiniog, which is the little old slate mining town village.
What was the remotest? What did you think? Blimey, was that?
well, some of the ones up in Scotland, so you're going through more boggy peatland, moorland.
Yeah.
There's the I can't remember the exact name of the station, but it's the one, you know, in Train Spotting when they go out.
Oh, right. They're there.
And they go on a kind of day trip on a train to the middle of nowhere. You go past, I think it's called Curragh or something like that.
Mind you, I had that at Glastonbury. I got off at Glastonbury, thought, am I in the right bleeding place? Because that is just literally a platform in the middle of a field.
There are plenty of remote little stations and do you know the poem by Edward Thomas called Adlestrop that used to be taught at schools? Oh, I remember Adlestrop, the place, because it's about a train journey. It's about somebody on a train stopping at a station that is sleepy, and no one got off, and the train moved on, and he wondered. It's almost like wondering what went on in the life of this little sleepy village town where the train station nobody gets off at. But on this trip, that station, like you were saying earlier, that station has closed because of the beaching cuts, Adlestrop. But I got off at Kingham, which is a station near it, and I walked to Adlestrop just to have a look.
A spiritual pilgrimage, exactly.
Yeah, it's a pilgrimage to Edward Thomas's beautiful poem, and then walked on to the next station. And so I kind of, even though beaching had closed the station, I walked the route, if you know what I mean.
We mentioned, you know, train spotters and how, you know, they're actually very gentle and soft, you know, not soft, but, you know, gentle and quiet people. And perhaps, and I'm not going to get all deep and meaningless on you, Tom, on a Friday morning, but, you know, perhaps in a world where everybody's shouting for attention and taking selfies, perhaps there's something to be admired about the gentle pace of not only, you know, railways themselves, but the sort of person who will invest their time to help, to getting a railway run up and running, you know, and then will sit there and harmlessly, you know, check the numbers.
I have great respect for these people, to be honest. You know, these old steam engines, locomotives, they were all rusting in a place in South Wales, and many of them were saved by these. They would just not exist. So these people have done our heritage, British heritage, a great turn. And there's also great expertise is required to know how to run a steam locomotive. So, you know, tip my hat to them and say, well done, you know, and we should be proud of Britain's rail heritage, because we did change the way the world traveled. But we shouldn't be so proud of right now is HS2 and the state of what we've gone and done there, because we had a chance. And we blew it to kind of revolutionize rail journeys in Britain.
Another one of the great what ifs. The book is called Slow Trains Around Britain. It's by Tom Cheshire. Tom, people want to find you online. Apart from, you know, where's the best place? Do you have your own website? Do you have a?
I have a website.
Yes,
TomCheshire.co.uk,
and that's with a Y.
Chess Like the Game, H-Y-R-E, Tom Cheshire. And then I have I'm on Twitter if anyone's still, oh, sorry, I should call X.
X, indeed.
Going to take me about a decade to get to it.
Only begs the question then, what is the next one, Tom? Is it great pedal car journeys around the UK? Is it, you know, unicycle across the Himalayas? What's it going to be, Tom?
Well, the next one actually is nothing. So I love walking, and I've written about walking around the Lake District and also the length of the River Thames. So I've done that. But so in April, I went round the Peak District, I went for 360 miles in a month.
Wow.
Walking in a big, not in the exact circle, but all the way, covering every aspect of the Peak District, because I think it's one of those parts of Britain that people don't know so much about. Possibly.
One of our regular listeners writes an awful lot. He does the tube routes, so he will do the districts and circle line above. So that is, you know, quite marvellous. Yeah. The book is called Slow Trains Around Britain. It's by Tom Cheshire. Notes from a 4,088-mile adventure on 143 rides. I don't know if it includes Clapham Junction, but there you go. It's by Tom Cheshire. You can order it, listeners, by our own virtual bookstore. Click on the rather lovely front cover, and a well-known delivery service will be dropping it by your front door before you can say the train now standing. The book is called Slow Trains Around Britain. It's by Tom Cheshire. Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you very much for your time, and hope happy trains.
We'll have to talk one day about the Tangier to Marrakesh overnighter. Now, that is an experience and a half.
Ooh, yeah.
Tom Cheshire, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for your time, sir.